Hi, I'm unwiped, unwashed, and disdained, Taylor.
And I'm Robert Pattinson walking Willem Dafoe like a dog in glorious black and white, Jemmy. And this is the Final Girl Files. This week, we experienced 2019's The Lighthouse, directed by Robert Eggers, starring Willem Dafoe and Robert Pattinson. And I love that I can just say those two names and that's it, instead of my usual, like, long list of people in this movie, because there's only really two actors.
Yeah, there are some other people in this movie, but they're on screen for about, like, 5 seconds each.
Yeah. Also starring...
I hope that mermaid got a fat check, though.
God, I hope. I hope she did. So, Taylor, this was your first time watching this film. Wasn't it?
It was.
So do you now understand why I chose it to accompany Beyond the Valley of the Dolls in terms
of just... Yes, because the insanity of this film, this was off the charts, and I loved it. It was delightful.
I'm so glad, because honestly, like, when I was watching it this time, because this is not my first time watching it, this is my third time, I believe, I was like, oh man, did I pick something too weird for Taylor? It was a total coin toss as to whether or not you were going to enjoy this movie, so I'm very glad that you did.
You should have known that there was nothing that was going to be too weird for me.
That's true. I mean, you did just give us Beyond the Valley of the Dolls.
I know, so. Like... So this was technically my first time watching this movie, but not really, because I think I've told this story on another episode, but I attempted to watch this movie shortly after it came out. My friend Ambrose and I thought that we found a link to torrent this movie, but when we tried to watch it together, on screen share, it turned out that, like, the movie that we had downloaded, like, was this movie, but number one, it was, like, a really bad quality cam rip, and number two, it was periodically interrupted by what I think were ads, but I'm not sure what the ads were selling, that were, like little dancing cartoon pinatas.
Oh, yeah, I remember this story, because the very similar thing happened when me and Jace tried to watch Eternals.
Yeah, so, like, I think we made it about 5 minutes in.
Which,
before,
like,
the dancing pinatas became too much to handle. Like, at first we were like, oh, we can ignore this. And then we, like the more that we were watching, the more we were like, no, this is not the way that Robert Eggers meant for the film to be seen. So we turned it off with the promise that I would watch it on my own at some point. I was like, oh, I'm going to go to the movies this weekend and see it. And then I, like, never did. So, because it was... I didn't have anyone that I knew who wanted to see it with me, and I was, like, in my tiny little college town, and I couldn't be asked to go see it, so I just never watched it.
So I did see this movie in theaters. I saw it with my brother Jace, who you all know from my Texas Chainsaw episode, and we actually watched it together this time, 2 nights ago. And it was, I think it was, like, me and him and, like, 3 other people in the movie theater.
Oh my God.
I was spiritually bonded with those 3 other people, even though we never spoke a word to each other, just in sharing this experience together.
Mm-hmm.
And honestly, weirdly enough, it was a very similar experience to, like, me thinking about you while watching this movie. I was sitting there like, oh, did I bring Jace to this movie that is way too weird for him? But no, Jace fucking loves this movie. So
it's delightful. How could you not love it?
So many jokes, so many lighthouse-related jokes were made during quarantine. God, that's really what it's like. That is really what it's like.
It up to and including sexual fantasies about, like, strange creatures, because so many people became monster fuckers during quarantine.
That's true. Jace classifies this movie, and we were both laughing about it. He classifies it as a pervert movie, and, like, he means that with affection.
I get it. I understand. It is a pervert movie.
He means that with deep affection, and with the caveat that there should be more pervert movies in the world.
I agree. Pervert cinema is an underrated genre. Another reason why this pairs very well with Beyond the Valley of the Dolls, because Beyond the Valley of the Dolls, I think, is also definitely pervert cinema.
Oh, that's for sure pervert cinema. It was, like, this and, like, Midsommar. The Witch also is a pervert movie.
This is, like, slightly unrelated, but the word pervert to me is, like, one of the funniest words.
No, that's what we were saying.
Or ever will be.
That's what we were saying, because we were like, that, it's such a perfect movie, perfect word for this movie. It's pervert cinema, and we love it.
Perverts!
And we are perverts.
And we are perverts. I'm a proud pervert. This movie is fucking delightful. I loved it. I wasn't sure how I was gonna feel about it, but I loved it. It was so good.
So for those not in the know who haven't watched it yet, which, like, first off, why haven't you? Please go watch this movie. It's so much all the time. But I will give you a brief summary of the plot, as I am wont to do on these episodes. So, broadly speaking, two lighthouse keepers try to maintain their sanity while living on a remote and mysterious New England island in the 1890s. And that is broadly what this movie is about, but...
Yeah, it's kind of like the Beyond the Valley of the Dolls synopsis, where it's like, yes, Beyond the Valley of the Dolls is about three women who go to Hollywood to seek fame and fortune and end up embroiled in drama, but, like, that is barely scratching the surface of what this movie is. Same with The Lighthouse. That summary only, like, it's the that's, like, the barest indication of what the fuck this movie is.
The barest bones of it all.
Yeah.
So,
where do we even start with this one?
Let's talk about Robert Eggers continuing the trend of just making the most insane movies ever and also being, like, meticulous with historical accuracy.
Like, he's such a king.
He's such a king. Okay, first off, I didn't know this going in, but, like, it doesn't surprise me now that I know it. All of the buildings for this movie, every single one, like the lighthouse itself and the cabin, like, they are built from scratch completely. And I would not be surprised if it was because Robert Eggers was like, hey, I can't find a building historically accurate enough to suit my needs, so I will simply build my own.
I mean, I believe that it's partially that, but it's also partially, like, I mean, am I allowed to just say that the lighthouse is a giant cock?
You are so allowed to say that, Taylor, because, oh boy, it is.
Every shot of the lighthouse, it's so obvious that it's just like a giant. And listen, I'm not normally the type of person who, like, will watch a movie and, like, put my little Freud hat on and be like, yes, phallic symbol. But, like,
no,
the lighthouse is a giant cock. It just is.
Listen, Chase and I had this conversation coming out of Nope. Where we were like, I fucking hate, because we're both film people, right? He's
in I've heard about the Yannick stuff in Nope.
We were like, I fucking hate when people put on their stupid little Freud hats and say everything in a fucking movie is either symbolic of a penis or a vagina. It's tiring, and I'm not here for that. But, like, sometimes it's just too much to ignore, and the lighthouse, oh my god, that's a giant fucking penis.
Yeah, that's a big old cock, and it somehow it looks more like a penis every time they show the lighthouse.
It just gets more and more penile every time you see it.
And yeah, I agree with you that Robert Eggers probably did it for historical accuracy, but also I like to think that he did it because he wanted the lighthouse to look as much like a penis as he could possibly make it look.
Listen, por qué no los dos?
We
all contain multitudes.
Robert Eggers contains so many multitudes, and that's why I love...
Another interesting thing about the production of this movie, which I will put full... I will give full credit to Mr. James Deadmeat, whose kill count for this I watched like a half hour before we did this because I just kind of wanted a quick refresher and some like extra information. But I thought it was really interesting because I made a note early on in my notes like, oh my god, like I just love the way that like Robert Eggers uses natural lighting to do his movies. But actually, because of the black and white and because of the film stock that he used to film this movie, every single set in this needed to be, like, insanely brightly lit. To the point where they, in the costume department, had to, like, deconstruct all of the historically accurate costumes and, like, kind of recreate them so that they'd show up on the film. So, like, all those fucking scenes where Willem Dafoe and Robert Pattinson are sitting, in, like, basically in the dark with, like, one single flickering candle or whatever on set... Everything was, like, so brightly lit that the actors sometimes couldn't see each other.
Oh my god. That's so funny. I also think it's really cool that this movie, not only is it shot in, you know, black and white, and, like, the aspect ratio is, like, square. I don't know the technical terms, but, like, it is a square.
It's 1:19, I believe, the aspect ratio.
I'm not going to remember that. It's a square.
I know you're not. I only know it because, I watched the kill count, and it came up.
The audio was also recorded in mono, which is awesome. It's not, like, surround sound.
Yes.
Robert or whatever the technical term for surround sound is. It's just, it's mono. And that's fucking cool. It just gives the whole thing. Hot take. This movie, visually, auditorily, whatever, this movie had the old Hollywood feel that Randy Moore was trying to do in Escape from Tomorrow and failed at doing.
You are so fucking correct. And that's because Robert Eggers isn't a fucking hack.
Robert Eggers has talent in his body, and he's, like, a good filmmaker who makes, like, good movies.
He has talent and passion instead of just angry spite at a bad vacation he went on.
Instead of just being like, oh, so we have to film this in black and white, so I guess I'm just gonna add a bunch of shit to make it seem like I did it on purpose. But whatever. Listen to our Escape from Tomorrow episode if you want to hear us dunk on Randy Moore for an hour.
And why wouldn't you? But yeah, actually, I think they showed the script for this movie again in the kill count, and which, like, this is just basically advertising the kill count now. Go watch it; it's good, and there's some good, like, behind the scenes stuff. But this movie was, from its, like, original conceptualization, meant to be in black and white. And I think
I believe that
because really cool.
It's so deliberate.
Mm-hmm.
Everything Robert Eggers does all the time is so deliberate. He's such a meticulous filmmaker.
And God, thank you for him. Thank you for him, God. What would we do without him?
I don't know. Like, I'm just so happy that he exists.
I think he's doing Nosferatu next, which I kind of hope is also in black and white. I think that would fuck severely.
I kind of want him to go all out on, like, the German Impressionist. I just want it to be, like, a silent movie. I think that would be very fun.
That'd be so good.
Make a silent movie.
He'd do it, is the thing. He would absolutely... I feel like Robert Eggers would absolutely make a silent movie. While we're talking about sound and silence and such things, I adore the sound design of this movie. It is so good at conveying the sense of, like, isolation. I love that the music, when there is music, like, there's a very minimal score, but when there is music, it sounds like it just could be the foghorn or, like, something coming from the environment. Like, I think it's so fucking good, and I love it.
Yeah, I also love how, like, you don't get a moment's peace in terms of the sound design. Like, there's always, you know, the foghorn periodically, like, that's one thing that people talk about a lot with this movie is, like, the periodic foghorn, or, like, just, like, the waves crashing, just, like, seagulls, just, like, there's always environmental sounds that are, like, oppressive and constantly, like, if you have misophonia, this is probably, like, the worst movie for you to ever watch.
Yeah, God. Oh.
But, like, it really helps you feel, like, trapped and claustrophobic like the characters are. Because you're unable to escape the sounds of the environment. You're always stuck at sea with, like, the fucking seagulls and the water and the foghorn like these two dudes are.
Exactly. It really puts you sort of in that position. I think the aspect ratio helps with that, too. Just, you feel the shrinking space of it, you know?
Mm-hmm. Can we talk about, like, the characters themselves for a minute? Because I want to deep dive into these two fucking weird-ass dudes.
It's fucking insane gentlemen, of course. Of course.
I love them. They're just delightful.
Robert Eggers, I think, sat down and was like, okay, who are the two most unhinged actors that I can think of?
Yeah, for sure.
I love that Robert Pattinson, like, before he did the Batman, just spent the 2010s just doing weird shit. This man really took his fucking Twilight checks and was like, peace, I'm gonna go do The Lighthouse.
Yeah, like, and honestly, even like his I know you haven't seen The Batman, but like, even his interpretation of Batman is fucking bizarre. He's just like, not to just like go on a rant about the Batman, but I just think it's really funny that like when Robert Pattinson plays the Batman, he's not like a cool guy. He's like a scrawny little freak. Robert Pattinson is just, he's killing it. He's wonderful. And he's such a little freak in this movie. I love his accent.
Oh, I love his accent so much.
Listen, Willem Dafoe's accent gets a lot of talk. Like, a lot of people quote the, like, hark, Triton, like, that whole bit. But, like, I think we need, and, like, it's delightful. I do love Willem Dafoe's accent. But I feel like we as a society need to take a collective moment in time to appreciate Robert Pattinson's subtler, but just as delightful, like, Massachusetts fucking, like, old-timey New England accent. It's so good.
The way he delivers the line, your goddamn thoughts, is sublime.
Your goddamn thoughts. Also, this is slightly, like, not so much about the accent, but I can't stop thinking about when he says, if I had a steak here, I'd fuck it.
Something about this movie that I think is so underappreciated is how fucking funny it is.
This movie is hysterical. This is hilarious. Like, it's one of those movies where, like, at the beginning of the movie, like, funny stuff happens and you're kind of like, am I, like, allowed to laugh at this? Because it's not quite clear whether this movie is a comedy, but it's sort of, I feel like if you just let yourself enjoy the funny parts, it's so fucking hilarious.
I'm sorry, how can you not, like, enjoy the sheer comedic timing of Robert Pattinson's delivery of, like, fine, I like your lobster, or whatever. Like,
fine, I like your lobster.
Like, it's so funny. I know
at this point we're just quoting the funny lines of this movie, but I also want to give a special shout out to Robert Pattinson's, like, monologue where he starts talking about how much he hates Willem Dafoe's character. And what does he say? He describes him as smelling like
piss, like jism, like rotten
like
dick.
Jism. But he specifically says that he smells like onions fucked in a farmhouse or something.
Oh my god, yeah.
Hot onions fucked in a farmhouse.
Oh, it's
just like, it's so good.
Masterful cinema. Masterful.
I want to be a fly on the wall on the set. I want to just watch them act this movie. Like, I want to see what they were doing between takes. Like, what direction did Robert Eggers give these men?
I think he just pointed a camera at them and said, go. That's just how they are.
Yeah, there was actually, fun fact, there was no script for this movie.
Willem Dafoe is just like that.
Willem Dafoe is just like that. Okay. Willem Dafoe.
Oh my god.
Oh my god. Okay.
I want to say the way that I came up with doing this movie after Beyond the Valley of the Dolls was I was watching this like video about a video game that he recently did a voice in. It's some like, it doesn't matter like what video game it was, but the commentator of the video referred to him as Willem the Lighthouse Dafoe. And like, a fucking light bulb appeared over my head and turned on, and I was like, oh my god, The Lighthouse is the perfect movie to do with this, with Beyond the Valley of the Dolls.
Willem, like, the Lighthouse Dafoe. Oh my god. I hope that he, like, okay. I truly love his commitment to the, I mean, as Robert Pattinson describes him, the Captain Ahab shtick that he does.
He put his whole pussy into this movie.
He did.
And it's so fucking glorious. His monologue. And you all know them. If you've seen the movie, you know the monologue I'm talking about. The way he does it without blinking. Like, hello? Sir?
He should have won an Oscar for this movie. And I say that without a drop of irony.
No, this movie should have won at least one Oscar, and it is a fucking crime. This movie should have
swept the Oscars. Fuck the Academy, for real.
Fuck the Academy. They still hate horror movies. Suck my dick.
If there was any justice in this world, this movie would have swept the fucking Oscars.
It's so good. I think Willem Dafoe was born to, like, talk like this. I think
I completely agree with you. This is the accent that he was meant to have. If you told me that this was the way that Willem Dafoe naturally spoke, I would be like yeah, that makes sense.
Like, you know how some people say they're born in the wrong century? Willem Dafoe was genuinely born in the wrong century. He was supposed to be, like, a grizzled sea captain, former sea captain, lighthouse attendant. This is who he is, like, at his core.
Yeah, once again, I genuinely think that they just turned the camera on him and just was like, go. Like, do it.
Can we talk about how... Can we talk about how cathartic it would be to go on just an insane feral rant like that? I couldn't stop thinking about it. I just want to fucking do that. I just want to.
The amount of screaming in this movie is just so wonderful. It's just fun to watch two men go completely off the walls, fucking batshit bonkers.
One of the things I like most about the characters in this movie is that they're both unreliable narrators.
Mm.
It's never, like, clear if, like, one of them is telling the truth, the other isn't. They're both not telling the truth. Like, what it puts you in this place where you can't rely on anything that you see. And I like that that's set up really early on. Like, the first kind of interaction that Willem Dafoe's character and Robert Pattinson's character, they have names, but I just think of them as Willem Dafoe and Robert Pattinson.
Yeah, because again, they're just being themselves.
Fun fact, Robert Eggers actually just locked Willem Dafoe and Robert Pattinson in a room and put a camera in there, and that's the result of this movie.
They just did that. Again, they just did that.
They just did that. No, but I think that's, yeah. So it's set up really early on where the first thing that Willem Dafoe, like, kind of does is that he's like, hey, go, like, get a drink of water or whatever from the pub, and Robert Pattinson does, and it's piss water, baby. That's piss, baby.
that's pussy, babe.
That's pussy, babe. That's piss, babe. So it sets up early on, like, even in this kind of innocuous, stupid little prank that, like, oh, you can't trust anything that this dude is saying. So you think, like, oh, okay, then I will rely on the viewpoint of our point of view character. But, like, turns out you can't do that either. And I just think that really adds to the sense of, like, isolation and going insane and, you know, all those things that we're all so wonderfully familiar with in the year of our Lord 2022.
I think one of the best things about this movie for me is that, like, most movies that have a kind of unreliable narrator or a kind of, like, more than one way to interpret them kind of vibe about them. Like, I'm thinking about stuff like The Shining or American Psycho, mm-hmm. which are the two that I think of when I think of, like, horror movies with, like, unreliable narrators.
Mm-hmm.
With both of those movies, you have two main ways to interpret the movies. Like, with The Shining, the way to interpret The Shining is either there were ghosts or it's all just Jack Torrance going crazy. And with American Psycho, it's either he committed all of the murders and people around him are just so dedicated to upholding their lifestyle that they're not interested in busting him for those murders, or he didn't do any of the murders that he thinks he did and he is just, like, having extended fantasies about murdering the people around him.
Mm-hmm.
But with The Lighthouse, it's like, there are not just two ways to interpret this movie. There are about 5 million ways to view this movie. It's like,
oh, yeah, for sure.
Is Willem Dafoe gaslighting Robert Pattinson to make him think he's going insane so that he can kill him like he may or may not have killed his last wiki or underling or whatever they're called? Or is Robert Pattinson just sort of going insane and Willem Dafoe is actually, like, completely fine. Or maybe they're both going insane. Or maybe neither of them are going insane. And everything is supernatural that's going on. Is the light in the lighthouse some sort of, like, eldritch monster that is causing the people who live in the lighthouse to go crazy? Is the mermaid real? Is she not real? What the fuck happened with Robert Pattinson's old boss whose name and identity he stole? Is the soul of Willem Dafoe's former wiki in that one-eyed bird? Like, there are so many avenues that this movie refuses to answer any of your questions. And it's not frustrating. It's just, like, fascinating.
Is this just Robert Pattinson's dying dream as he's getting his fucking guts picked out by seagulls? Because at the end, I noticed this time only somehow, but there are like logs behind him when he's fucking on the beach.
What the fuck? I didn't even notice that.
Yep. So is this just his dying dream? Is he got pulled out of the river or what the fuck ever, or washed up on some beach and is getting his fucking innards pecked out by seagulls? Like, never an answer. Never get an answer. And rather, like you said, rather than being frustrating, it's just, you can pick any one of these avenues to take and it opens up a whole new bounty of questions and symbolisms and interpretations that you can pick through. Like, it's so vast.
There are about a million ways to combine the different interpretations. Like, maybe you take, like, two or three of them, but not the other ones. Like, the supernatural thing can be true, and also maybe Willem Dafoe is a murderer who's trying to gaslight Robert Pattinson. Like, there are so many. You could watch this movie a hundred times in a row with a different interpretation of it at the forefront of your mind, and it would be a different viewing experience every single time, and you would not get bored.
Yep. And that
is such a fun,
really is the hallmark of a fantastic fucking movie.
Oh yeah, completely.
And it's so simple on the surface. Like, it's two actors, one location, and, well, you know, two actors and a few other bit parts and one location, and that's all you need to make a really fucking compelling story.
Mm-hmm.
Robert Eggers, you fucking madman.
So, I'm so, okay, we're gonna have to talk about the gay stuff at some point.
We are gonna have to talk about the, I was literally just thinking, we're gonna have to talk about the gay stuff.
Because I kind of alluded to it with the whole, like, the lighthouse has a giant penis thing. But also, like, a lot of people have interpreted this movie in a homoerotic way. And yes and no, I think.
I mean, it's hard not to with some of the content that we get, but
it's as cut and dry as a lot of people make it out to be.
No,
because nothing in this movie is cut and dry.
No, of course not. And there's, like, again, there's, like, so many shades of it, and you can have a different interpretation of it every time you fucking watch, because that's the way everything is in this movie. But these two men do slow dance in each other's arms and almost kiss. So it's there, but God knows we don't have any idea of, like, the details of it, because that's not what Robert Eggers wants us to have.
One thing that I was thinking about over the course of this movie in terms of the homoeroticism was the idea that the mermaid is a, like, that she is something that Robert Pattinson's character makes up as a way to funnel his sexual feelings towards men at what he feels is an acceptable target, i.e. a woman, or at least a woman-shaped creature.
Mm-hmm.
Meanwhile, he can't bring himself to fantasize about a human woman. Even when he's forcing himself to fantasize about a woman, it has to be a mermaid, a creature with, like, you know, and he can't fantasize about a normal, like, having sex with a normal woman. It has to be a mermaid washed up on the shore and she had a weird mer vagina and I fucked that.
It's a mermussy, first off.
You know what?
I'm sorry, I was holding on to that for that whole monologue. He needs that mermussy.
You know what? He needs that mermussy. And I...
God did damn you, guys, you. Did you guys think we were going to do a serious film analysis the whole time? Come on, you know where you are.
And, like, he does fuck that mermussy.
He does fuck that mermussy. He fucks it good.
Yep. He sure does.
See, I think that's interesting in terms of, like, when the illusion of the mermaid is exchanged for an illusion of Willem Dafoe, but also Willem Dafoe does have tentacles.
Every time he fucks that mermaid, he's also, like, it's intercut with images of the men in his life, whether it be Willem Dafoe or his old boss, who it's kind of implied that he maybe wanted to fuck also?
Yeah. I think at some point we were watching, Jace looked at me and he was like, I think he fucked his boss.
Either he fucked his boss or he really wanted to fuck his boss and couldn't deal with it and that's why he let him die.
Yeah.
Or maybe killed him and lied about it to make himself seem better. Again, like, nothing is definitive in this film.
And nothing
I almost just
be.
Said that the only definitive thing in this movie is that there are two guys in a lighthouse, but, like, even then, it might not even be.
Even
could
then,
just be could Robert just... Pattinson making the whole thing up. The seagulls. Okay, I could not stop thinking about the Rime of the Ancient Mariner during this.
And yep, somebody mentioned that, I believe, in the comments of, again, the Kill Count video. So, please.
Yeah, the Rime of the Ancient Mariner is a poem that I remember reading in college. And, I mean, it really doesn't have very much in common with this movie, other than the idea that misfortune falls on people who murder seagulls.
Mm-hmm.
There's a different reason why killing a seagull is bad in the poem. It's because, like, the seabirds in general are, like, good omens.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, if you kill a thing that's supposed to bring you good luck, bad luck happens. But in this movie, it's that dead sailors' souls are inside of seagulls. And so Robert Pattinson killing the one-eyed seagull maybe is the thing that maroons them on the island and stops the boat from coming to pick up Robert Pattinson. And maybe the sailor's soul that was inside of the seagull that he killed is the one of Willem Dafoe's old assistant.
Yep.
Or maybe not.
Who knows? Robert Eggers doesn't want you to know.
Do you think anyone knows?
I think Robert Eggers does know.
I don't know if he does.
If only because I feel like that's just the kind of director that Robert Eggers is. You know what I mean? I feel like he might have an idea, but I don't think he'd ever say it to anyone.
I agree. I don't think Willem Dafoe and Robert Pattinson know.
No, they don't know. He didn't say it to anyone. That's why I said he didn't say it to anyone. He wouldn't say it to anyone, not even his actors or anybody else working on the movie. Just like, yeah. Do you know what
it
else
is what
I like?
It is.
Mm-hmm. Going back to that sort of feeling of uncertainty and distrust, we don't get the names of these two characters for like a good, like we first get Robert Pattinson's fake name. And then later on, we get the name of Willem Dafoe's character. And then finally, like, maybe in the last third of the movie, we get the reveal of who Robert Pattinson's character actually is. And I think there's something about having a character's name that makes you feel like you know them. And for a long time in this movie, you don't know either of these guys.
Mm.
And you're sort of left in the dark, I suppose. I had a better thought there and I lost it.
No, but like, I also think it's interesting that by the time you finally find out both of their names, you realize they're both named Thomas.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, oh, they're like awful reflections of each other.
Yep. Yep.
Like, yeah, these two men who are fucking trapped here and like are, you know, like both kind of going insane together in this small isolated place. Yeah, they're both the same. They are a one. There is a oneness to their existence together. And I think that's also partially where the homoeroticism comes in, where it's this idea of like being stuck with somebody for so long, your horny thoughts really don't have anywhere else to go.
Yeah.
Other than this one person that you're fucking stuck with. I mean, this is kind of gross, but like I couldn't stop. It reminded me a lot of, weirdly enough, it reminded me of Flowers in the Attic.
Yeah. Yeah.
Stay with me here. But
no,
like,
no, no. But like, we got some of that too in The Witch. So I see. Yeah. Where I could. Yeah.
This idea of like in Flowers in the Attic, these siblings are stuck together, trapped in this place for so long. And again, your horny thoughts have nowhere else to go other than the one like other person who you're with.
Mm-hmm.
And in Flowers in the Attic, and partially in The Witch, it results in like an incestuous thing. And in The Lighthouse, having nowhere else to put your horny thoughts partially ends up with homoeroticism, but also partially ends up with your horny thoughts also kind of have nowhere else to go but the mermaid statue that you found in the bed.
The lighthouses are turning your children gay, parents.
The lighthouses are making them gay. Yes, exactly. Do you think that Wake planted the mermaid statue there?
Maybe. Again,
that's about as well as anyone can expect anyone to answer anything about this movie.
Again, like, I don't know. Robert Eggers doesn't want me to know, so I don't.
He's very masterful at keeping you from knowing the things that you want to know. But, I mean, I want to call him Winslow, even though that's not his name.
Go for it.
But, you know.
It's Winslow. The name that we know him for most of the movie, so.
Winslow certainly accuses him of having planted the mermaid statue in his bed. But again, sorry. It's, you know, I keep saying this, but like, I don't fucking know. And you don't know either. You don't know. You could not make an ending explained video about this because there's no answer.
Oh, I'm sorry. I need to see if this exists. Hold on. Live on
mic. I'm sure it does. Oh, you're about to Google it, aren't you?
I'm looking at it on YouTube.
The Lighthouse ending explained.
Oh, boy. The first one I see is from Watch Mojo, so that's...
Oh, no!
That's a great... It says, the Lighthouse ending completely explained. And I bet you any amount of money, it's fucking not. And there's two more that I'm looking, that I can see right now, and I bet you there's fucking more.
Guys.
Cinema Sins was a mistake.
The clickbait industrial complex has ruined film criticism.
Oh, God. I hate it here.
Anyway. I also hate it here. Can we go back to talking about the very good movie instead of the horrible internet?
Yes, of course we can. So they filmed this movie in Nova Scotia, Canada.
Love that.
During, I believe they said either March and April or February and March. So all of those shots where they're just standing in the shittiest looking weather possible, they didn't need to fake that, baby. It was just like that.
That's just what it's like in Nova Scotia.
The conditions on this movie were apparently, like, weather conditions anyway. Like, I'm sure Robert Eggers is concerned for the safety of his actors, but the weather conditions working on this movie were reportedly god-awful, but no one actually cared. Like, I think in an interview, Willem Dafoe said, like, you know, it was miserable filming this movie, but I didn't really mind because Robert Eggers is such a masterful visionary director that working under him was a pleasure at all times. So
That's nice to know. And you know what? I always say this, but like, it's always a good sign for a director when actors do multiple movies with them, because that means that they liked them enough to sign on for another one.
Yep. And Willem Dafoe was also in The Northman. And
also, Anya Taylor-Joy was also in The Northman, I believe. That's a good sign. She's supposed to be in Nosferatu. I think that was rumored.
Yep, she is supposed to. I remember reading that somewhere, but I don't know the details.
And listen, I know that Willem Dafoe technically kind of played Nosferatu in Shadow of the Vampire, but he didn't really play Nosferatu. So I say that Robert Eggers should cast him as Nosferatu.
I agree.
In his upcoming Nosferatu movie.
I just think Willem Dafoe should get more unhinged work.
I agree. Always. I think he should be allowed to go buck wild all the time, every day. Have you seen that picture of him in the grocery store in Nova Scotia, smiling very happily at a box of pancake batter with the full lighthouse beard?
No.
It's a good image.
It sounds delightful.
It's a delightful image. I have never seen a human being look happier than Willem Dafoe, clearly like after a day of filming The Lighthouse, like in some fucking grocery store in Nova Scotia, just holding a box of pancake batter and being like, yeah, pancakes.
Good for him. God.
That's how I feel about pancakes too, Willem.
The purest expression of human joy.
it's a delightful image.
Can I just say, I googled The Lighthouse to get our little blurb up, and the first question in the people also ask section is
the best part of Google, by the way.
Just the best part of Google. And
objectively,
you know,
the best part of Google. Google is very evil in a lot of ways, but a good thing about Google is that when you Google a thing, they show you the questions that people ask the most about the thing that you searched. And sometimes when you're Googling a movie, you get some very fun questions.
The first one is just, is The Lighthouse LGBT?
I mean, yes and no. And yes and no.
It's LGBT and also homophobic at the same time. No, I'm kidding.
Wait, LGBT, wait, like all at once? It's all at four. It's lesbian, it's gay, it's bisexual, and it's transgender all at once. I always find it really funny when people say, like something is LGBT, because, like, all of them?
All at once?
All of them? You know what? I think you could find a way to interpret this movie in all four letters of the acronym. I think someone could do it.
I was gonna say, if there was ever a movie that could be all four at once, it is The Lighthouse.
I want people to tweet at us, because obviously I would argue that it is gay and at times bisexual because of the mermaid, but I would like to see people try to interpret it as lesbian or transgender. Hit us up on Twitter with your lesbian and transgender interpretations of The Lighthouse. I would like to hear them.
Please, God. The world
needs
them.
Wait, hold on a minute. Wait a minute. Robert Pattinson's character choosing another name.
Oh.
There's something there.
Ooh, there's something there. After killing.
There's something there.
After killing the man that had it first. There's something there.
Assuming the name of a man whom he had complicated feelings towards and was jealous of. There's something. Someone could do something with this. I'm at a loss for how it could be lesbian, though. Other than the inherent lesbianism of the sea.
The mermaid is a lesbian. Just period.
The mermaid is a lesbian because she rejects him.
Oh my god.
She rejected him because she's a lesbian.
We did it. We did it, kids.
We did it. We figured it out. The Lighthouse is all four. It's lesbian, it's gay, it's bisexual, and it's transgender. We figured it out, guys.
I hate this podcast.
No, I love this podcast, and I hope we never stop doing it.
Oh, God.
Where else would you get quality content like this? I'm interested as to what the other questions, because when I googled The Lighthouse, one of the questions, I believe, was, is The Lighthouse real? Which,
here I'll just read the list here. Is The Lighthouse LGBT? What was the point of the movie The Lighthouse?
Good question.
The point was so that Robert Eggers could go insane.
Exactly. Third, yes.
Is the Lighthouse based on a true story? Is The Lighthouse very scary? What does the mermaid mean in The Lighthouse? What was Wake doing in The Lighthouse? What is...
Wait, hold on. No, pause. Do they think that one of the characters... Did you say Wake or Wick?
Wake, with an A.
Okay, I thought you said Wick, and I was like, do they think one of the characters in this movie is named Wiki?
No, Wake, as in the character Thomas Wake.
I was about to get, like, what? Okay.
And, OP, your answer to that is going insane, as only Willem Dafoe can.
Mm-hmm.
What is the meaning of The Lighthouse? And finally, what was the light in The Lighthouse?
I think this needs to be a recurring segment.
I do too. Wait,
I think this and Live Laugh Letterboxd should be like our two things. I think we need to do this going forward.
We're instating this. I'm adding it to our little template that I have. I will add it after the discussion.
Because this is so fun. I want to know what the people are saying.
Listeners, if you have any suggestions for what this segment should be called, please tweet at us, because I'm not very creative. Yeah, tweet at us.
Honestly, it's by a stroke of genius that I managed to come up with Live Laugh Letterboxd. So, like, hit me up with those suggestions for what the Google questions bit should be called.
We will give you credit on the podcast.
Yes. I'm trying to think about, like, smart people things to say about this movie, and I don't think I can.
I have one more smart person thing to say about this movie that we can end on. I really like all of the mythological nods that we get, not only to, like, sea myth, but I heard this movie interpreted as a retelling of the myth of Prometheus, which is interesting to me.
Oh, interesting. I mean, especially with that ending, I guess it's kind of obvious. I can't believe I didn't think of that.
And we also just get little sprinklings of seamen lore. That's S-E-A-M-E-N before. Okay, for this movie, it's appropriate, though.
Seamen lore, Jemmy? Really? Okay, there is cum in this movie.
Exactly.
There is on-screen cum in this movie.
That's why I said this movie is is 2 hours of pissing and shitting and farting and puking and cumming. That's all it is.
Yep.
I said I had smart people things to say, but that is not a smart person thing to say. I'm sorry.
When Robert Pattinson was standing underneath that grate watching Willem Dafoe jerk off, and, like, two full beads of semen, of fucking, like, cum, came dripping down through that grate, I knew that I was in for the best movie of the 2010s. I just knew.
And you were right.
And I was right. I cannot get over the fact that you see on-screen cum in this movie.
There's at least three fucking masturbation scenes in this Taylor. Why are you so fucking surprised?
I feel like masturbation is one thing, but I feel like you never see cum.
Robert Eggers was like, I need every bodily fluid in this movie. Piss, shit,
God, you're cum, so right.
Blood, spit.
You're so right.
All of it. Shove it all in there.
Or as Robert Pattinson calls it, jism.
Okay, that was my attempt to end on smart people things that didn't go
well.
No,
we can continue to say smart people things. I just needed to talk about the cum.
Fine. Of nautical lore.
Why is nobody talking about the cum?
Taylor, I think you'll find on Letterboxd that plenty of people are talking about the cum.
That's true. A lot of people were talking about the cum. But, you know, I just think
the
it's important.
The cum is a focal point.
Oh, God. Okay. Continue with your smart people thoughts.
That was my only smart... I enjoyed that there was a lot of, like, talk of mythological things we see, you know... Willem Dafoe as King Triton at some point when he's getting dicked down by Robert Pattinson.
When he's getting dicked down by Robert Pattinson. of.
I mean, we have the mermaid, obviously, is the most.
And her mermussy.
And her mermussy, yes. And the seagull, which we can't say sexual things about.
No.
Can we?
I mean, if the seagull has the soul of a person in it, and no, Robert Pattinson, no. like, beats the shit out of it because he's like, trying to repress his gay thoughts. Because the minute that he finds out that there's a man in that seagull, he's like, well, we can't have that. So he needs to kill it.
Being a seagull gay as fuck.
What you need that one eye for? To look at men with?
To look at other men?
I think we both need to be put down.
I hate this podcast too.
Anyway, speaking of like smart people mythological things and like references to other things, there's a like extended reference to a painting called The Hypnotist by Sasha yes. Schneider from 1904, which I thought was really fun and cool. Like, but it's also very funny because it's like there's a part like Robert Pattinson like is, like, looking at himself, and then he fucking turns around, and Willem Dafoe is just standing there, butt-ass naked, shining bright lights into Robert Pattinson's eyes. And at first I was like, oh, that's bizarre, but apparently it's a reference to, like, a famous painting that I didn't know about, so. It was actually very interesting and well thought out, but at first I was like, Willem Dafoe is nude and got big swang and thangs.
It's what it feels like when you get a new hyperfixation.
It's like when it feels like Marvel is looking you in the eyes and doing that.
All the time. My entire life is lived in a constant state of that.
It's like fucking Kevin Feige just grabbed you by the shoulder and is doing that to you. Yeah. That's what it feels like. That's all what Rob Zombie time. Is currently doing to me. So it's fine.
Love that for you.
Yeah. God.
In conclusion,
do we have anything else to say?
I have one more thing to say, and I would like to end on it.
Okay.
In conclusion, Gas Lighthouse, Gatekeep, Girl Boss. Taylor, please take us to Live Laugh Letterbox.
I'm gonna kill you in real life. I know okay, you are. So I do a segment on this podcast called Live Laugh Letterbox, where I read funny Letterboxd reviews, and the first one, I believe, was directly quoted by Jemmy.
Yeah, probably.
From Letterboxd user Vern, who says that the way that this movie is just 110 minutes of pissing and shitting and farting and coming.
It is, though. That's all it is. But it's 4.5 stars.
Our next review is from a friend of the pod, Rhea, who, along with her wonderful husband, James, does the podcast Ether and Icor. But she simply said, is he, you know, fond of your lobster?
So good.
Gave this film 3.5 stars. Thank you, Rhea. That review made me fucking cackle like a wild animal. It was very good.
I love seeing Rhea and James's reviews pop up on my Letterboxd feed, knowing that I was this podcast was the cause of them.
The reason for the season. Lauren said, just saw a mermaid, effervescent.
God, of course.
Which is kind of a deep cut joke, but if you get it, you get it. And
if you know, you know.
If you know, you know. And that's important. LME just says, I could smell Willem Dafoe, 3 stars.
I could smell both of them.
I don't think a more accurate way to describe BO has ever been given, but for in this movie when Robert Pattinson says onions fucked in a farmhouse. Like, I know I keep bringing up this line, but like, I've never heard BO described more accurately.
It's inspired.
It's very good. Robert Eggers, I want to open up your skull and just like poke around in there for a bit.
Truly.
Diamond Bolt simply says, Willem Dafart. 3.5 stars.
Yep.
And you know,
What more can be said?
What more could be said? And that's the last Letterboxd review that I will read, because shockingly, a lot of the Letterboxd reviews were very well thought out and interesting. And a lot of them were just the same unfunny joke about, like, you know, like, isn't it funny how they fuck each other? Which, like...
Mermussy.
Yes, but, like, also no.
All right.
And I heard you say the word mermussy, and I'm tactfully ignoring it. I won't play into your sick games, you know?
I know. But it will be living in your head, and that's all I need to know.
I know.
All right. Now, what is your star rating for this, Taylor?
My star rating, I'm going to give this 4.5 stars.
I'm also going to give this 4.5 stars, actually. Because, like, it's not like, again, my metric for 5 stars is The Conjuring 2, which is a movie that is extremely deeply personally attached to me and that I have some sort of bond to. This movie is a masterpiece. It's extremely well crafted. It's fantastic. I'm definitely going to rewatch it at some point, but it's not like a big fave, but it is really, really fucking good. And if you have any interest in filmmaking at all, why have you not watched this movie?
Yeah. Also, if you're giving this movie 4.5 stars is not an indictment of its quality. The reason I'm giving it 4.5 stars is because I reserve a 5-star rating. I've said this before, I'll say it again. I reserve 5-star ratings for movies that are, like, deeply personal and, like, you know, again, kind of like you said about The Conjuring 2, like, movies that are, like, is for me.
Mm-hmm.
I loved this movie. It's fucking awesome. I don't think it's for me in the way that other movies are.
Exactly.
However, it is a fucking gift.
It is wonderful. If you are into horror movies or movies in general, or if you just want to see Willem Dafoe and Robert Pattinson go insane, which, like, why wouldn't you? Then watch this movie. It's great.
Honestly, like, I think everybody should want to watch Willem Dafoe and Robert Pattinson go fucking insane.
Truly. Listen, film as a medium was invented so that we could watch Willem Dafoe and Robert Pattinson go insane.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
All right, so next time we will be watching 1972's Sisters, which is a movie I haven't seen before, but that I am very interested in checking out, mostly because Margot Kidder is there, and Margot Kidder is hot as fuck.
I love Margot Kidder, and she does a French accent in this movie.
Oh, then I'm on board immediately. I'm there. Please.
She's delightful. And also, I believe that, like, yes, it is part of, like, our next block, but, like, also I feel like it is pretty bonkers in a very similar way to The Lighthouse and Beyond the Valley of the Dolls, so we're continuing our trend of batshit insane cinema.
As everyone should, frankly.
It's also a Brian De Palma movie. I love Brian De Palma. He's a wonderful director. Blowout is another one of my favorite movies of all time. Carrie, I mean, of course.
I was gonna say, I fucking love Carrie, so.
Sisters is one of his best, and I believe most underrated, movies. It's a great fucking time.
Until then, you can find us on Twitter, Instagram, and TikTok at FGFpod, and we will see you next time for Sisters. Bye, everybody.
Bye.